Hello, welcome to You Don't Know Lit.
Welcome to you too, Nick.
Hey guys, welcome to You Don't Know Lit.
Are you welcoming us?
Yeah, thank you.
You always yell. You always yell at the beginning of the episode, welcome to You Don't Know, and I never know if you're talking to like someone in the room with you or us.
Guys, welcome. Welcome to a very special cop-out episode. To help me are my friends, Ian and Joe, two high school English teachers.
My name's Joseph Holshue. I'm a high school English teacher. And Nick, for today's very special cop-out episode, I'd like to talk about maybe the most famous book in all of freshman English. Romeo and Juliet.
I am Dr. Ian DeYoung. Nick, for this week's very special cop-out episode, to talk about maybe the most infamous book in freshman English literature.
Ooh.
Romeo and Juliet by His Excellency William Shakespeare.
May your earlobes turn into assholes and shit on your shoulders.
Hey, the plot doesn't fucking matter at all. This is what I think it's about.
If you look closely enough, every author was at some point a racist.
Audiobooks don't count, right?
All art is quite useless.
Who told you that?
Fun fact, that is how Joe laughs.
Nick, have you read Romeo and Juliet?
This is a big question.
Yeah. Damn it. I was hoping it wouldn't come up.
We ought to begin the episodes by determining this because I think it matters to Nick.
I like to opt in if I have read it. You can just assume that if I'm not telling you I've read the book, then I definitely have read it.
He does seem to pounce on the ones that he's read. Like it's like in the intro.
I'll get all over that.
Yep, he's like, welcome to You Don't Know Lit, and I've read Joe's book this week.
Take that, you chumps. It's true. It's true. This is a...
No, this seems like a just terrible book. It seems like I know what happens. I don't need to read this book.
Well, that's our episode, folks. Thanks. Thanks for listening. It's weird, though. It's crazy because like those things you say, Nick, the two things, you know it already and you don't... It sounds terrible. That's so many people. So many people.
I hope you guys haven't spent a lot of time preparing like, you know, really good story structure talking points for this episode. Cause I feel like, you know, we know what happens.
Well, yeah. I think when he says this, Joe, I always enjoy knowing from him what he thinks happens.
Oh,
so,
I would like, that's a great game. So Nick what happens in Romeo
hang on,
and Juliet?
Let's set this up, Joe. Joe, we have power. For once in our lives, we have power. Let's make the most of it and exploit it. Nick, you have an indeterminate number of seconds, which may or may not have started, to tell us what you think this book is about, and we will absolutely cut you off with no warning whatsoever.
Okay. They die.
That's it. That's your time. Yep. You got it.
Nick, well within the time. Very well done.
Yeah, I think he beat us again.
I got a challenge for you guys. What do you think you're going to talk about Romeo and Juliet that everybody doesn't already know?
Okay, let's just break that phrase down. What do you think you're going to talk about Romeo and Juliet that everybody doesn't already know?
Oh, I got a lot, pretty clear.
I got a lot.
Yeah, and I actually have very little to say about it, but I am pretty sure Ian has a lot. So I was hoping just to chime in when I could.
Wait, when we say cop out,
Joe
is just,
really copping out.
Is this just Joe copping guys, I do have prepared a rap if you'd like to hear it.
Fantastic.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I was right not to prepare. like that partner that you guys had in high school, I'm just going to sit back and let Ian get the A for us.
Joe actually only prepared a rap for today. So dang. Shoot. Do you want to do the rap?
Yeah, I think I'm not going to tease it any longer. I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to put my...
All right. Do you want me to...
Just I need a funky beat. I need a funky beat, please.
Okay. I'll put that in later. You can rest assured.
as you so frequently do. You lay down a track underneath. If you want a tale, I got one right here to freak you, to creep you, to make you feel fear. The story's well known about two warring families, Capulet and Montague, the best of the Veronese. Veronese means from Verona, where our story is set. And now, loyal litheads, it's time for me to get to the tale. Romeo and Juliet fail to live a long, happy lifetime. They don't quite turn to crime unless you count a wedding across family lines. Their folks are all enemies, family strife without remedy. These kids' love is heavenly, but here is my threnody. For their deaths, they were dumb. They thought more of fun than of checking the mail or talking one-on-one with the friar, who tried his best to help them, but couldn't. His yelp when he found out they were dead is pitiful. Their families made peace. That's the end. That's my story full.
Yeah.
I got so many things I could say right now.
Please do. Say them.
I think, well, for one, just don't even ever announce a rap again. Just start rapping.
just rap.
Just start. Second, man, should we just do a cold open with that? And then I guess, like, I'm also wondering, like, oh, man, I definitely can't cut these raps out. I really want to edit them out, but they're I don't think I can.
Yeah, clearly a lot of time goes into them.
Podcasting law would stop me.
Okay. That's a really ringing endorsement there of I did stay up till 3 in the morning working on those. So rhyming is hard.
Rhyming is hard. I noticed you had a couple like nice like internal rhymes there. Like you had a clever one. I almost want to see the lyric sheet in front of me because there was some pretty good like Juliet and not Captain.
I'll put it in the doc. You can look at it and give me your thorough literary criticism.
I'd love to.
All right, let's, this might be a cop-out episode, but I think we still need to go over some show rules here for you guys.
Wait, hang on.
Yes?
What happens when you break the show rules?
Oh, rule two.
Yeah, there's a bit of a Freudian slip there.
No, these apply to you guys. You should know that by now. Rule number one, only unavoidable spoilers. That's my bad. nope. Number two, omit needless words, Joe.
Thank you.
And three, one of our newly worded rules. Winning isn't
everything. It's the only thing, Rock.
Is that how Vince sounds?
That is Nick's.
Are you just doing spot on generic Vince old Lamar. Man?
Get in the ring, Rock.
That's not.
Hey, so Ian, do you know anything about Shakespeare? Have you ever done anything?
So I didn't before this prep, but I did some quick Googling, and it turns out he's not actually, he doesn't exist. It's a fake. It's all a fake. These people on these message boards said he's not real. He was a variety of other people.
It's like many other people.
Yep. Ian has done his research, guys. He has watched the YouTube videos. He has gone down the rabbit hole, and we all know that Shakespeare is a deep fake.
Is this book, is it quick? Like, can I get this done quickly?
I think it's...
I read it.
I don't know. Ian, do you ever teach Romeo and Juliet, Ian?
Yeah, I do. That's partly why I'm talking about it in this week or this month of back to school episodes. Well, I think maybe to start with, we should ask Nick, in keeping with what's emerging disappointingly as kind of one of our trends or our tropes, Nick, have you seen the Baz Luhrmann film from the 1990s?
So I would like to point out that everything I have to say about this film or everything I have to say about this play is pretty much based on the Baz Luhrmann film.
It stars...
Let's just go ahead and just not call that a film.
Whoa, what?
Oh, whoa. Oh, what is this? Take.
I knew if we dug far enough, we'd get
we're talking about Leonardo
crazy
DiCaprio's
hot take
movie, right?
We're talking about the Leonardo DiCaprio movie, 1996, Romeo plus Juliet.
Wait, you guys like it?
Love it.
Oh, I'm on the fence. I'm thoroughly on the fence. It does have Paul Rudd in it, though.
It
and
does
he looks,
have the pest in it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Nick, this is a movie, and if you haven't seen it, you should probably see it at least once.
I've seen it. I think so. Flashback to a ninth grade, I think they made us watch this in association with like reading Romeo and Juliet.
So you have
which I did not read. I didn't need to read it back then, and I don't think I need to read it now. And if you guys have some sort of compelling argument that you'd like to share with me, I'd love to hear it. But what's the point of reading a book if you already know exactly what happens?
Oh, I think, I don't know. I think there's something about the journey. That's that's my compelling. No, no.
Something about the journey, I guess.
No, there's I will say it's kind of like we've talked in the past about books which have like these big climactic events at the end, and maybe they do get spoiled. I remember when we talked about Dorian Gray, the sort of central conceit of Dorian Gray is fairly well known, magic painting. Like so there's a sense in which you say, why should I read this thing if I already know what's going to happen? Well, the reason is to find out how it happens. And I think that the journey that Romeo and Juliet takes you on is actually kind of cool, because every time I read this book, by the time I get to the end, even though I know what's going to happen, I know they're idiots. I know they're going to mess this up again.
Are they idiots?
Yeah. It happened in my rap. Yeah. I mentioned that in my rap. I said they were dumb in my rap.
Expound.
But even though I know, right, they're going to screw it up, I still feel like it's still a huge bummer. And the play kind of gets you into this. So it's not about this twist ending. It's about how they want this so bad. They want happiness so bad. And it seems like they're so close. They're literally like moments from living happily ever after, and they don't.
Well, and Ian, I don't know if you have this experience, but when I teach this to my freshmen, they very frequently come in with the exact same attitude where they say like, hey, they both die at the end. Like, we know what happens. And my counter argument is like, yeah, I mean, Shakespeare spoils the ending in the first, in the prologue, right? Yeah. Like, we get this, whose misadventured piteous overthrow is, you know, doth with their parents' death bury their parents' strife, or doth with their death, I'm sorry, bury their parents' strife. And like, that's a spoiler. Like, Shakespeare tells us in the intro, right? Hey, these two kids, they're going to die. But the good news is that grudge, or that death, is going to settle the grudge between their families. And if you listen to the next 2 hours, right, like here, we're going to show you the story.
Right. If you guys aren't aware of this, like when this was performed, it wasn't like they would just do, back in Shakespeare's day, they wouldn't just like do one performance of it and then everyone would know what happens. Like, well, that's it. Never staging this again. These are performed about once a week for as long as people would keep coming to see them. So you've got audiences who know what's going to happen. You've got to keep them somehow. And if Shakespeare hadn't written this like well to be a gripping story, people would see it once and be like, yep, they're idiots and they died. The end. I'm not coming back to this thing.
Now, Ian, you are a Shakespearean expert, correct?
Yes, yes.
I think you could just end that sentence at, Ian, you are a Shakespearean. Is that correct to say?
Yeah, you can. And I will not argue with it.
Interesting. Now, this book is in a different language. As somebody who is not familiar with the language of Shakespearean, as Joe so eloquently put, what did I miss? Because there's got to be mountains.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you should start by telling us what you got.
He did. They died. Remember?
I played that game. They died.
He spoiled it. He broke rule one.
It's forbidden love. I get it. It's forbidden love. Families feuding. That was relevant back then. Now it's not. Now there's different stories about different types of forbidden love. And then they died because of it. What else happens in the book?
They didn't die because of the forbiddenness of their loves. They died because they were idiots. Like, their plan is so stupid. They make this really, really complicated plan to like...
But how old are they? Aren't all kids idiots?
Well, yeah.
Like, I don't think that's fair.
It is kind of it's like this Rube Goldberg-esque plan, isn't it?
It's a great way to describe it.
So you think this is more, you kind of are, we're victim blaming. So it's their fault because they're stupid.
Well,
no.
It's not their parents' fault for not being open-minded about their pure love.
Okay,
it's their fault for just not having enough good ideas in their heads.
I think it's funny. It's not okay. My hot take, my quick and dirty is that
hot take.
Hot takes. Welcome to hot takes. Cop out edition.
Welcome to hot takes.
Their plan is not a great plan, but they also are kind of the victims of circumstance. So famously in the prologue, there's this reference to star-crossed lovers. A pair of star-crossed lovers take their life. And Joe, like, what does star-crossed mean?
Yeah, you know, it's just this, you know, I would, you could substitute the word with almost fate, right?
Yep, like, it's fate.
Right. Like it's star-crossed. Like their destiny is written in the stars in the prologue, which is kind of where their destiny is written in the stars, period, which is why it's so appropriate that we get their destiny in the prologue, where it's like, right, hey, we're like, there's these two kids. They're both going to die. Right. But let me tell you, like, how it gets there.
It's honestly, I've never made this connection before, but as you say it like that, it reminds me, stay with me here, of Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul. Both of these shows are shows where, like, we know where the characters end up. With Breaking Bad, like, in the first episode, spoilers, he gets cancer. Spoilers for the first episode of Sling that aired, like, years ago. In the first episode, like, we find out he has cancer. And so we know, like, eventually, given that this is television, he's going to end up, you know, it's going to be there. Cancer will incapacitate him or kill him. Better Call Saul, the same thing. Like, we know where Saul Goodman is going as a character. We know kind of how he ends up. And this play does the same thing. It says, listen, here's where they're going. Here's what's going to happen. Follow me as we get there. And it's a promise, right? The journey is worth taking. The journey is worth going on.
Yeah.
Affirming kind of that, like, it's valuable to see how we get to this death, to see, like, where it comes from, what causes it, and to feel things along the way.
As you guys know, every week we laboriously come up with themes. Just theme after theme after theme after theme. But you know what? Next week is Labor Day. Can we just take a week off? Can you guys just bring me some books that... No theme?
No theme.
No Ooh. Theme week. Wow.
Themeless.
Wow. I feel like that's so challenging because we have to find a book that won't fit another theme.
No. I got so many ideas.
How?
What?
Yeah, we're going to run out of books.
That's true. I read a statistic that said, like, if all you did in your life was read books, if you started and, like, you said...
You'd be a fucking loser.
Yes. Yes, that was the statistic. No, if all you did in your life was read books without stopping, you would fall behind, like, within the first year.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there are more books published every year than people can keep up with. It's impossible.
Yeah. All those cookbooks? All
those.
So many ways to make cookies.
All those cookbooks.
We should do a cookbook week.
I'll bring a book that's absolutely unconnected to anything else.
Perfect.
I will also bring an unconnected book.
Do you guys have any deep cuts? What could you tell me about this book that I might not already know?
Oh, dude, I got so much.
Yeah, I bet he does. Can I tell you one thing that I really like?
Do it.
Okay. Is it about the pest?
So, yeah, it's about John Leguizamo. Am I saying that right? Leguizamo?
Nobody knows.
All right.
He doesn't even know. He pronounces his own last name different every time.
Every time. So, slurs it's like a snowflake.
So, John Leguizamo. No. Tybalt in this character is like in this play is really a badass. Like, he's really a dangerous, dangerous dude. Some of my favorite things are the way that Tybalt is described when he is off screen or when he's off the stage. At one point, they call him the Prince of Cats, right? They call Tybalt the Prince of Cats. And later, when somebody asks
kitty cats?
Yeah, like kitty cats. And later, when somebody asks about Tybalt, they say, like, why should I be scared of Tybalt? He's described as the very butcher of a silk button, which I've always taken to mean, and Ian, please correct me, but I've always taken it to mean that he is such a good swordsman, such a talented swordsman, that while you're fighting him, he could, like, cut the buttons off your shirt or put his sword through the buttonholes on your shirt. Like, that's how talented
something
he is.
With buttons, Ian. Yeah. Is that correct?
Yes, I can confirm that's completely correct. Yeah, he's a braggart, he's a loudmouth, but he's also obviously good at killing and aggressive. And this is one of my favorite things about this play. It's got a hidden poem in it which as I say it out loud, this sounds like it very much appeals to me and probably not many other people, but it's kind of cool. So bear with me here. All right. So it's a classic moment when
like magic ink to reveal it?
Well, kind of. It's one of these things where you have to understand the poem form, the form of the sonnet, and then you get it and it's like it's doing. So Shakespeare writes this play in such a way that the way people talk communicates information about how their psychologies are meshing with each other. So
can I pause right there, and can I just tell Nick, a sonnet is a poem with a very strict format.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
A very strict format. A sonnet is 14 lines long. Ian, stop me if I get any of this wrong. A sonnet is 14 lines long. It has a rhyme scheme of A B A B C D C D E F E F G G.
That's correct.
It is written in iambic pentameter, which means that each line is pentameter is five, and iambic is like an iamb is a stressed and unstressed syllable. So it's like 10 beats per line with stress followed by an unstressed syllable.
Is this written down in front of you, or are you just
English teachers have this stuff off the dome.
Yeah, this is like the stuff that they just pound into you in English teacher school, right? Okay. Like they strap you to a chair. Like
a drill sergeant screaming the word pentameter in your face.
All right. Do you want to talk about it?
The last two lines are a couplet, which means they like break from the rhyme scheme. We have that A, B, A, B, C, D, C, D, E, F, E, F, G, G. And a lot of times the last two lines are like a little bit of a turn or a little bit of a like a joke is almost how I think of it as. It's like the last two lines are very revealing for the poem. Ian, have I missed anything?
No, that was really good. I kind of feel like Joe, all due respect and love, I feel like you were showing off a little bit, and I am in fact impressed. That was
this isn't a place for ego, Joe. So check that at the door, okay?
I'm really terrified in this episode specifically that Ian's just going to run away with what he knows about this play. No,
probably more clearly put than I would have. I would have rambled.
You guys want to see how I can juggle this episode?
Hi, guys.
Yes, very good, Joe. We really went off on a tangent there. I don't remember what we were originally talking about.
Oh, we're talking about secret poetry and its importance to this play. So,
tell us more about your secrets, Ian.
Well, this is not my secret. This is written. Okay.
Forbidden love secrets.
Romeo goes to this party and he sees Juliet and he goes to talk to her. And he starts talking to her in sort of this rhythmic fashion. And he's not being weird. He's speaking verse. And this is one of the things about Shakespeare. Every highborn character speaks verse. So it's not weird that he's speaking in iambic pentameter. It's not even weird that he begins rhyming in A-B-A-B format. And he's saying, like, hi, I would like to talk to you. And he has this four-line section, A-B-A-B. And then Juliet responds, and she responds in iambic pentameter, and hers are rhymed too, C-D-C-D. So between the two of them, they construct a sonnet about their budding love for each other. And this is something which you don't get as a reader unless you know sonnet form, and unless you understand the complexity of how the sonnet works. It's not something which you just dash off. And I think you could do any number of interpretations of this, but I think what Shakespeare's doing here is sharing with us how much they're on the same page, how they're vibing. So they start off each having their own quatrain, which is the four line section. They each have their own chunk, which is fairly easy to do, right? To rhyme with yourself. But when it comes time to rhyme with somebody else, here's rhymes again. This is the order of the day. When it comes time to rhyme with somebody else, that's more difficult. They build this love sonnet together about their developing affection and interest in each other. And then they start doing it again. They start another sonnet, but this time it's even more kind of tangled up so that they're...
they know they're doing it?
This is the thing. Like, it depends on performance. If you, like, if you make them be super, like, aware of the sort of poetic value of their language, then sure, I think it's kind of sweet for them to be like... It's hard. Like we imitate people that we're talking to, right? We pick up the mannerisms of the people that we talk to. I've been told that I sound more like a Wisconsinite when I'm talking to you guys than when I'm talking to people out here where I live.
Sure.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. There. Oh yeah.
I've been told I sound more like a doctor after I've finished.
I'm sure you do.
So scalpel it,
stacked. So it could be like an accidental thing. They're just kind of like picking up on this very very rhythmic structured thing.
Like another cool thing about this is early in the novel, Nick, as I alluded to earlier, like Romeo's in love with this other girl, or he's infatuated with this other girl named Rosaline, and he speaks about her in kind of poetic language, like, but it's super like cliched and heavy-handed poetic language. And at one point his friends are teasing him, right? They're looking for him after this party, and they say, like, Romeo, where are you? Rhyme but love and dove and I'll be satisfied. And what they're saying is like, hey, make a shitty rhyme and we'll know it's you, right? But then when he's speaking to Juliet, he's doing this like super like intricate, complex, interwoven rhyme and this poetry with her. And we kind of get that as like a symbol of this evolution. Like, oh, this is different. Like, this is different than Rosaline.
Do you think they might be like soulmates or something?
That's the idea, right?
It's hey, like, guys, do you believe in love?
Wow.
True love.
The mirthless laugh after that question is just so concerning.
Hey, Ian, I have a question for you.
I got an answer.
If I want to see the breast. Oh no. Subconscious.
If you want to see breast, you're going to want to watch the 1968 version of Romeo and Juliet.
No, that's a bad one.
That was my breast question. Oh, I mean my next question. Ian, if I want to see the best musical performances, I go to Broadway.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? I get on a ticket and I fly a plane to the Broadway. Okay, trust me. I've
seen. Get in the plane, you say, taxi man, take me to Broadway.
Taxi driver. Scalpel.
And then you get thrown off the plane for threatening the pilot. It's a whole thing. We know your drill. Anyway.
Don't bring scalpels on planes. I've seen plays in Milwaukee. Do not do it. Do not do it. Just go somewhere else. Drive to Chicago. It's lovely there. It's a lovely city. It's closer and will be better. So where would one go to see the best performances for Shakespeare?
In your general area or in the world?
No, in the world.
Oh boy, that's
hard. Is there a street somewhere that you would go and see this, or?
One of the places where they do good Shakespeare and they would do a good Romeo and Juliet is the Royal Shakespeare Company in Stratford upon Avon, which is in England. But you can't go there right now because everything is shut down. That's a place. It's supported in part by the British government because like they've invested. Like this is a part of Britain that we want to invest in. So they do have some support from the British government. And
was Shakespeare British?
Yeah, believe it.
Yeah,
or not,
fun facts about the author Shakespeare British.
We didn't do any fun facts because oh boy. Yeah,
No.
But Nick, I will tell you this, and anyway, I'll say this to anybody who's sort of in the Midwest, if you, loyal litheads listening from the Midwest right now, there's a place in the middle of Wisconsin, kind of like the middle of southern Wisconsin.
Oh yeah,
American Players Theater, and it is in, I want to get the name right, the town.
Spring Green.
There we go. Yeah, thank you. So APT is it doesn't have Shakespeare in the name, but they do a lot of Shakespeare. That's kind of one of these Shakespeare theaters, and it's in a beautiful location. It's kind of a bit of a drive from a lot of stuff, but there's a little tourist economy right around there, and there's good Shakespeare. They do good Shakespeare there. Yeah. So if you live in the Midwest at all, like I think it's within striking distance from Iowa and Minnesota and Illinois and Wisconsin, obviously. Even Indiana. So it's worth checking out good, probably some of the best Shakespeare in the Midwest.
How is this possible?
It's so weird.
They also have an outdoor theater there, don't they?
Yeah, it's outdoor. One of the best Shakespeare plays one of the best performances I ever saw was a Hamlet at APT, and it was in the middle of the summer. And like you guys know how those Wisconsin summers, like hot, when it gets hot, it gets hot, nasty, and humid.
We had one today.
And like it just like sits on you, and you know it's going to be like 10 o'clock and it's still going to be crazy hot and crazy humid. So it's this hot summer evening, and like we're in direct sun because we got cheap seats. And the way Hamlet begins is two guys standing guard in the middle of winter outside. complaining about how cold it is. And they're like, the line is, it is bitter cold that I am sick at heart. And this is not a laugh line in any production except for that one, where there's these guys dressed up in the costumes and they're standing sweating under the Wisconsin sun. And they're like pretending that they're playing, they're acting, they're performing cold. And they said, the one guy said, it is bitter cold and I am sick at heart. And the crowd just erupted because it was insane.
So either, just to recap here, best plays, best performances to see Romeo and Juliet, either at the official Shakespeare location in England or the middle of Wisconsin.
In the middle of Wisconsin. It's weird, but they do good Shakespeare there.
Those are the options.
You heard it here first.
What else should I know about this play? Why should I read it? Why do you guys teach this to your wonderful, wonderful patient students?
Everyone sort of sets it up as this. It's great for high school students because high school students feel the pangs of love. It's like the one Shakespeare play that has high school students in it, basically. But I kind of feel like to get this play, you have to have some perspective on it. You have to be older.
You have to be in a very stable relationship in your 40s.
No, I think you need to have gotten beyond the sort of ad hoc way that you live your life when you're in your teens. Like
it is a weird time to teach this.
It is, right? Because like,
it's like, oh, are you really emotional right now about love? Here's a story about two kids that kill themselves.
Right. It's like,
consider it a cautionary tale.
Odd juxtaposition.
and to really feel the power, the sort of the pathos of it, you have to understand like they're making these bad decisions and things are conspiring against them. You have to have some distance from that. I think like asking someone to feel strongly about this play when they are currently like going through all of that high school age drama, like the raging hormones and the powerful crushes and the pain of being ignored by the person you like. And, you know, and seriously dealing with sometimes suicidal thoughts and these kinds of things. Like, I don't think it's the right time to assign it. I think this play, I didn't really enjoy it until I got older. And now I'm an ancient haggard man. And I like it because I can say, yeah, I understand. I have enough distance that I can appreciate it. And,
it doesn't sound like you appreciate it. It sounds like you think those kids are stupid.
You know, Ian, but you talk about this play being something that, like, you need some distance from being a teenager to appreciate. But I'm sitting here and thinking about all the books that, like, we've been, like, forcing on high school students for generations. And isn't that the theme of high school literature? Like, you can't, like, I don't think you can really appreciate The Great Gatsby until you've lost something substantial in your life, right? Like, and like, we have... If we look at The Catcher in the Rye, like high school teachers love to show The Catcher in the Rye to high school students and be like, this is what it feels like to be young.
Look, don't you feel all these feelings?
And students are like, fuck, it is. This book reads is dated, right? Like this isn't what it feels like. This kid's like an angsty crybaby. So right. I don't know. Like, I feel like that's like the curse of teaching high school English, is we give students these books that we think have like these timeless, relevant themes that our students aren't ready for or don't buy into, or you need the distance of age to appreciate.
I think it's one thing to recommend books for students, to assign books that don't feel dated, that students can actually see themselves in. But I think the language in Shakespeare in general is such a hurdle that you spend more time like trying to understand what happens and deciphering it than actually like reading and feeling along with it. So honestly, if I had my druthers, and I'm not sure I could get this to fly, but I would rather teach Shakespeare's play Titus Andronicus, which has like a bunch of murders, some cannibalism, and Shakespeare's first your mom joke. Like, it is.
Go on.
It's. I'll bring it to the podcast sometime. It's ridiculous, but it's so like the story is just like a bunch of revenge and violence and stabbing, and it's not like wholesome. It's not like pleasant, but it's so much more kind of straightforward and surface level that students don't work like the language. You get past the language, and it's just like, okay, this is more or less an action movie. I think Romeo and Juliet with the language, it's too, there's too much going on. Like it's yeah. It's too dated.
It is dense. It is dense.
I'd like to congratulate Romeo and Juliet for winning this week.
They did.
In honor of their untimely demise. I'd like to honor them with the victory this week.
Are we dedicating this victory?
Yeah, we're gonna dedicate this episode. Let's take a moment of silence as well. Okay. Thank you. That was it.
That was really fast moment there.
Does anybody have
let that bulk out a little bit?
Anybody have a quote?
Joe, you and I could read that sonnet back and forth.
Oh, sure. I think that sounds nice. Dibs Romeo.
Oh crap. All right, Joe.
If I profane with my unworthiest hand this holy shrine, the gentle sin is this. My two lips blushing, pilgrims did ready stand to smooth that rough touch with a tender kiss.
Good pilgrim, you do wrong your hand too much, which mannerly devotion shows in this. For saints have hands that pilgrims' hands do touch, and palm to palm is holy palmer's kiss.
Have not saints lips and holy palmers too?
Aye, pilgrim, lips that they must use in prayer.
Oh, then, dear saint, let lips do what hands do. They pray, grant thou, lest faith turn to despair.
Saints do not move, though grant for prayer's sake.
Then move not while my prayer's effect I take.
And then they kiss.
Okay, now kiss, guys.
I'm kissing my microphone. I'm not sure if that's correct.
I'm kissing my pops. What do you call this? My spit screen.
pop filter, buddy.
Pop filter. Podcasting.
Kissing my spit screen. You know, when we make it big, when we're a huge deal, a huge international global superstar podcast group, that's going to be the tell-all behind the scenes book title. Kissing my spit screen. You don't know Lit Story.